One of my favorite books is The Golden Bough. It was written in the 19th century by Sir James George Frazer, and it's a 12-volume collection of mythology and religion, and is considered by many to be the origin of modern anthropology. Now, in The Golden Bough, it's described that there was a tribe that lived along the Niger River. And there, when their king saw that his people were frightened by an invisible evil, such as a plague, he would send men upcountry into the interior to purchase and deliver to him what is described as a sickly person. This poor soul was dragged alive and face downwards from the king's house up on a height, down some distance to the river's edge, and the townspeople would follow, taunting the crippled victim and crying, "Wickedness, wickedness." And then they drowned him in the river. And as soon as the sacrifice stopped struggling, the people would cheer, because they believed that their terrors had died with him. And this spectacle was not unique. In Thailand, people would choose a debauched woman, as it was described, to throw over the city walls. In the Caucasus, a slave was paraded through town and then stabbed through the heart with a spear. In the Bible, in Leviticus, it's recorded that the ancient Jews would carefully anoint a goat and set him loose in the desert to die. In fact, that's where the phrase scapegoat comes from. And all these rituals, they had the exact same purpose: to ward off an undefined evil. The ceremony of the scapegoat is deeply woven into the history of every culture. It is an elemental part of humanity. This need to make an invisible threat tangible, and then to destroy it. In fact, the ritual survives today. It's less dramatic, but it's just as tribal and emotional and irrational. I don't remember when I first saw the name Omar Khadr. As a Canadian diplomat tracking South Asia, I knew of his father, and I remembered Prime Minister Chrétien's clumsy efforts to assure the Pakistani government that he posed no threat. And later, after September 11th and the invasion of Afghanistan, the Khadr name returned to me in intelligence briefs. There weren't many Canadians running around with Al-Qaeda, so naturally, attention was paid. And in 2002, when U.S. Special Forces captured the 15-year-old, I vividly recall the feeling of justice being served. I mean, there were some grumblings about his age, that he was a child soldier, but for me this was easy to dismiss. This was simply the mewlings of the weak-kneed left, unwilling to stomach the hard reality of this new war on terror. But when I first saw a photo of Omar Khadr, it raised a small doubt in my mind. This was obviously a child. Surely he couldn't be such a serious threat. But I pushed the thought away, which was easy, because his mother's regular outbursts of hate made the entire clan unlikable. I would privately tell journalists that they couldn't see the bigger picture. I hinted that the classified reports on Khadr painted an unambiguous picture. He and his family were evil. As the boy was dragged through the media and into Guantanamo, I walked behind and I whispered, "Wickedness, wickedness." After the conservatives were elected, they treated Khadr with the same disdain as their predecessors. Sure, there was liberals like Erwin Kotler, who gnawed at my conscience when he raised questions about the lack of due process. But my biases overcame my doubt, and I breezily dismissed them as hypocrites. The years passed. We watched as Khadr grew up in detention, buffeted by the pseudo-judicial circus of the American military tribunals. And we saw him punished by the Canadian government with increasingly petty bureaucratic and legal gambits. And at some point, I noticed that there were fewer voices baying for his blood. And at some point, gradually, eventually, I too stop defending his imprisonment. Time grinds down even our most self-righteous beliefs. Ironically, the more I traveled and worked in Afghanistan and Iraq and Pakistan, the less I saw terrorism as an intangible and existential threat. It was real enough, and it was recognizable, and it was not Omar Khadr. Now, regular opinion polls over the last decade suggest the majority of Canadians disagree with me. Like the Conservative Party, they do not see Khadr as a boy whose childhood was stolen by his father, a boy who has been punished beyond all balance as a symbol of a wider evil. They see the very embodiment of terrorism. They see a fanatical killer. They see him throwing grenades. Now, I could argue the facts. I could point out we violated a treaty on child soldiers, a treaty that Canada itself helped draft. I could explain in detail all the different ways Khadr was denied due process by the American and Canadian governments. I could give you all the legal rulings, even from the Supreme Court itself, that side repeatedly with Khadr. I could share data on his extremely low likelihood of recidivism. I could detail the conflicting testimony that casts doubt on whether Khadr even threw that grenade. But for many of those who agree with the government's efforts to obtain an emergency stay of an Alberta judge's decision to grant Khadr bail, none of that matters. The ritual of the scapegoat is not rational. It comes from the deepest part of our brain that is filled with an undefined dread at the pervasive threat of terror and demands blood. The next time you see a Conservative politician stand up in Parliament, shouting and gesticulating as they thunder in righteous fury at the evil that is Omar Khadr, watch them closely. And recall this passage from the Golden Bough. As Sir Fraser describes, shamans, as they prepared their scapegoat for sacrifice, by beating the empty air and raising such a hubbub as may scare the mischievous spirits and put them to flight. For Maclean's Magazine, this is Scott Gilmore.